All right, it's 82 days until opening day. What better time to launch a brand new podcast? Hello, I'm Brandon Warren, and I am joining you from the Cold Omaha Podcast Network. This is Midwest Swing, episode number one. We're going to talk about baseball with a little bit of a Midwest tilt on things. And like Nelly and the St. Lunatics back in the early aughts, this is Midwest Swing, and we don't have a clue. I am joined today, and this is my co-pilot, my Christine Leahy to my Colin Cowherd, the Guardsy to my Barrero, the Tenna. We're not going to go there. But Andy Carlson, how are we doing today?
Hey, I'm fantastic. I'm going to go with P. Diddy to your Notorious B.I.G.
Oh, does that mean I have to die?
Well, at least he'll die in Vegas. Wait, no, that was Tupac. Where did Biggie die? Oh, he died in L.A.
Was that L.A. or was it New York City? I can't remember.
It was one of the two. Yeah.
And so yeah, let's hope that doesn't become a polarizing issue to where one of us has to take it on the chin. But anyway, like I said, I'm Brandon Warren. I have been a writer for Fangraphs for a while. I've done a few things in the Twin Cities with 1500 ESPN, Star Tribune, Pioneer Press. I am currently writing for the Fangraphs fantasy site, Rotographs. I have my own blog at brandonwarren.com, and I have been contributing recently to a website called Baltimore Sports and Life. You can find me on Twitter at Brandon_Warren. You can find me on Facebook. I have a fan page that I believe is facebook.com/1, Brandon Warren. Got a lot of fans there that I like to interact with and post some kind of fun stuff. Andy, feel free to throw your Twitter handle in there too. You're kind of the brains behind this business, and I'd like people to follow you as well.
Yep, at Andy Carlson Show, but I'm kind of omnipresent. People know me.
Yeah, people know you. A little Ron Burgundy action going on there. So as I noted, the general layout of the show, we'll just kind of talk all baseball. We're not going to – well, we'll try to stay on topic, but staying on topic will mean jumping from topic to topic. We'll try focus on baseball pretty much exclusively. But at the same time, we got that creative commons and that ability to just kind of do whatever we want. And with that in mind, Andy, I wanted to ask you, how's your Vikings hangover doing? I was out of town over the weekend, and I actually kind of had to watch the game on the ESPN tracker and then on an app on an iPhone in Montana with serious lag. So obviously didn't go quite the way Vikings fans had planned. How are you coming to grips with the season ending?
I was perfectly fine right after the kick, and I feel like most of the fan base – it has moved on, has gone through the 12 steps of grief, and be able to take a step back. Like 11-5 division champions this year, ahead of schedule as far as the Teddy and Zimmer plan goes. But there's another part that says like same old sorry ass Vikings about how to lose right at the gun like that.
Yeah, I think it's exhausting for Vikings fans to have to process 50 years of failure in between every single play in a single game. The Vikings defense stepped up in a huge way this season. I think they were one of the best in terms of points allowed per game. And honestly, though, when the Vikings defense was called on to close things down like a closer in baseball, I think they did just that more often than not. But yet the schadenfreude or the self-hatred on Twitter was always, oh, they're going to find a way to blow this. They're going to find a way to blow this. And at 11-5, they found a way to get it done at least twice as often as not. And I think, like you said, I think they were a year ahead of schedule. The funny thing about NFL rebuilds is it's not like baseball where you need 3 to 5 seasons. You need one or two good drafts and probably to hit it on a free agent or two. It depends on your strategy. If you're the Redskins, you're just going to go crazy with that Daniel Snyder cash. But I think the Vikings have found that mix of finding some supplementary talent in the free agent ranks, getting some guys, especially on the defensive line. They've done well with their picks lower in the draft. I think the first round picks, specifically on Patterson, maybe haven't panned out. But I think they're trending in the right direction, and I think next year you're looking at a team that can threaten for the NFC title. Would you agree?
Yeah, there's a lot of hope in the fan base, and it is really nice that being a position on free agency and the draft where you're not looking for the savior, you're just looking for supplementation. And I think a lot of fans do see that, and they understand that the next 3-year window is going to be a legit shot for the Vikings to take it all.
Definitely. And I've been reading mock drafts. It's kind of like my thing to hold me over now, even though the season's only been over for just a couple days. But if you could pick one position, what are you honing in on in the first round? Obviously, we're still a few months before the draft, but the mock draft cycle never sleeps.
That's the thing about the NFL is that's a year-round sport, and you know, there's almost people that like the mock drafts and the draft season more than football, it seems like.
Yeah, and I saw one today, Leonte Carew, a wide receiver from Rutgers. Honestly, wide receiver or linebacker, you can't go wrong with offensive line. I think those are the three places they'll look to address. With linebacker, it's a lot's going to depend on what kind of role Chad Greenway is expected to take next year. Probably restructured deal. Same thing for Mike Wallace. So that's probably enough Vikings talk. I'm sure people are getting antsy to talk a little bit about baseball, but it is an exciting time for a lot of sports in town, Vikings included. The Timberwolves obviously don't look very good, but are young and exciting. And so are the Twins. Before we dive into the Twins, I wanted to get this show off with a contest, kind of engage listeners for this first episode. And so basically, I contributed to a Twins Daily podcast, excuse me, Twins Daily prospect book, excuse me, and I wanted to give away a copy of it. So as you're listening here, the first person to send me a Twitter mention who can tell me which former Minnesota Twins jersey, which is autographed, is hanging in my home office, will win a copy of the Minnesota Twins Prospect Handbook. And please, if you're not interested in the handbook, don't answer the question. But anyway, the first mention that I get once this podcast is up and live will win a copy of the Twins Prospect Handbook. It's a great book. You can get it on twinsdaily.com. It's a lulu.com joint. It's a fantastic little piece of literature that will fill your bookshelf and your mind with a lot of different ideas about the Twins farm system, which is still a very strong system even after graduating a handful of players. So yeah, see if you can figure out whose jersey is hanging in my office, and I will provide the first person with one of those handbooks. So the first thing I wanted to dive into as we get this podcast up and running is the state of the American League Central. Andy, well, for the listeners' benefit, what kind of baseball fan are you? Or where are you at baseball-wise in terms of your engagement with the local nine?
Well, with the Twins, it's kind of weird because it was, baseball was my first sport, my first love, and the thing that I really got in depth into, like playing baseball in the backyard of my dad, and going through the entire Twins lineup. I was always Brian Harper because of the mustache. It was
Oh,
good times,
nice.
but just kind of drifted away. I think it's a combination of, me being so involved in the NFL now, and then also, the Twins kind of not being a great product for a couple of years, probably since about 2010. But now, with the new stadium, definitely not opposed to, sitting outside, having a couple beers, watching a game, especially when the Twins are back, because then standing room tickets are like $3.
Yeah. Excuse me, you mentioned your podcast. I forgot to have you kind of tell people what you do. I know you do the Purple for the Win. I think you're doing Andy, is it Andy Must Die and the Dad Mode podcast. What else are you working on these days?
Pretty much behind the scenes, hammering out this Cold Omaha Podcast Network, which is going to be officially dropping here in the couple weeks. But overall, podcast audio, because I have the face for radio, it's kind of all consuming, and it's come along nicely.
I was going to say you kind of look like Brian Harper, so that was an apt player to choose to look to pretend to be, 20 some years ago.
Yeah,
But
even though I kind of look more like the Korean dude that they just signed. What was his name?
yeah, Byung-ho Park.
Yeah,
Yeah,
that guy.
and we'll get into that a little bit too, because the projections are the kind of look fondly on him as a good pickup for the Twins. So that's going to be a good, bit of positivity for Twins fans to lean on as they move into another season. So as I stated, I wanted to get into a little bit of the state of the American League Central. You get the Twitter rubes that are all, mad online about the fact that every team in the division has improved but the Twins. Honestly, I don't know that that's necessarily true. The Twins have made some moves that you could probably consider lateral. Torii Hunter departing, he did more behind the scenes than he did, between the lines. Aaron Hicks showed more in 2015, but to get a young catcher for him, isn't a bad deal. And then there is Byung-ho Park, who will probably nail down the DH role, maybe play a little bit of first base. There hasn't been that blatantly obvious, hey, the Twins are improving move that fans want to be beaten over the head with. But at the same time, you've got a young and up-and-coming team with some prospects like Max Kepler and Jose Barrios that are soon to debut or get their regular playing time in the big leagues. And I think that the Twins are just kind of viewing this as, hey, we're pretty close to where we want to be without needing to do much from the outside. honestly, I kind of had hoped they would go a little bit more of an edgy, aggressive direction, maybe sign one big-time free agent, but either that's not in the cards this season or maybe not at all. But Terry Ryan is notoriously conservative as a general manager, and that continues to be the case this season, this offseason, excuse me, and probably moving forward. So when you look at the division as a whole, the Twins finished second last year behind the Royals, the world champion Royals, who I think are pretty much locked and loaded to do it again this year. You know, my argument is they overachieved a little bit, and Fangraphs, we'll dive into Fangraphs projections here in just a minute, tends to agree. They see them as a 79-win team again going into 2016. Obviously, the big thing with projections is people get them screwed up with predictions, and predictions, you know, is just kind of, you know, you survey the scene, you come up with what you think will happen, and you may or may not have basis in mathematics or probabilities or anything like that, but it's based on feeling. What's going to happen? What do I think is going to happen? Projections, you run the numbers, you run it through some kind of simulator or another. They tend to skew conservative. For instance, there's only one 90-win team projected in the American League this year, and that's the Boston Red Sox, who won 78 games last year. So, again, the American League is kind of a dog pile of quantity over quality. You got pretty much every team is between like 78 and 85 wins. And so that's probably more of an indication of where the league stands as a whole. But they're going to skew conservative. And so sometimes that'll lead fans to be like, well, you know, we won 90 some games last year. How are we going to fall back? The Blue Jays, for instance, won 93 games. They're projected to win 84 this year. And then so some people are going to be a little upset about that. But as far as the Central is concerned, it projects the Twins in last place, but with 78 wins. Honestly, I thought the 78 wins was about their talent level and how they should have played last year. Honestly, two 79-win teams, that's the Tigers and the Royals. They have the White Sox at 81 and 81 and Cleveland at 85 and 77. I think you're looking at a dogpile of teams within seven games of each other that, with a little bit of variance, any one of them could finish first, any one of them could finish in last. And so I think with the Twins fans being, you know, a little upset that the club didn't go crazy in free agency is basically the conservative nature of Terry Ryan saying, look, we can be who we are and still have a very good chance to win the division. Andy, from a fan standpoint, from a distance, did you view 2015 as a big surprise? Did you view it as a transitional year? How was it viewed by somebody who, you know, maybe didn't follow it like every single second of the year?
Well, it was kind of refreshing because I did follow it a little bit towards the end because they're actually relevant as the season went on and into the fall. And as a, I guess I call myself casual Twins fan, it was, yeah, it did give you some hope, you know, coming back from a couple of years of just abysmalness. Whereas, you know, there are a lot of young pieces. The whole Sano, you know, coming up and dominating things, really fun to watch. And you know, this team, it's, you know, a lot like the Wolves, a lot like the Vikings in this market, is that they're young and gives a lot of promise.
Yeah, and to be young and be pretty good is not a bad place to be. I think, again, I believe you should supplement your young stars when they're cheap. That's Miguel Sano on a $500,000 contract. He played like somebody who will someday make $20-plus million per year. Byron Buxton projects to be that kind of guy. So your best chance to surround them with elite talent is to do so when they are young, when they're not making a ton of money. A team that has really honed in on that process is the Chicago Cubs to get out of the AL Central and jump to the NL Central. And they've done that this offseason. Ben Zobrist, obviously a jack of all trades, who will be able to help them in a number of different ways. Jason Hayward is going to be a fantastic player for them. He's probably going to play center field. And then even John Lackey. I wasn't crazy about John Lackey. I think he's 38, 39 years old. So I didn't really think that going out and getting an aged starting pitcher like that was definitely high on their list of priorities. But again, you see the process here, and that's a big reason why Fangraphs has them pegged to win 95 games next year. Again, and that's probably conservative. You're probably looking at a 100-win team on the north side of Chicago just because of all the different moves that they have made. And honestly, I think Fangraphs has them as the best team in baseball next year. It's hard for me to disagree. The American League with the Red Sox, that's a little different. I can, kind of throw a wrench into that, but that's just, again, the American League is going to be crazy this year. There might be any number of different teams that could step up and be a great team in the American League. So I've been kind of teasing these projections, these Fangraphs projections that dropped yesterday, again to emphasize projection. It's going to skew conservative. I think, last year they had the Twins winning 72 games. The Twins ended up winning 83. So, an 11 game swing is huge, and so game swing on this year's projection, they'd win 89 games and probably the division. So there's a lot of room for improvement. There's a lot of room to fall back, and no doubt when the season ends, that's kind of where teams find themselves is either improving internally or with some variance. And so it's always interesting to kind of take a snapshot at this point of the offseason with, again, a few players still available in the offseason that could swing things too. But it gives us a good big picture view of things. So when you look at the East, they have the Red Sox on top, 92 wins, Yankees second, Orioles falling pretty far back, 76 wins. It's going to be an interesting race in the East. The Yankees are old. The Red Sox continue to keep making moves. They got that shutdown back end bullpen. I'm excited to see if they can do another turnaround like they did a couple seasons ago when they went from last place to winning the World Series and then again fell back into last place again last year. So it kind of seems like they're doing the every other year thing like the Giants have been doing, except in the American League. We touched on the Central briefly, maybe not briefly, but the Indians first 85 wins is what they're expecting. It's a team that can pitch. The big hit that they've taken is Michael Brantley is going to miss a big chunk of the season. He was actually injured at Target Field trying to make a diving catch. That's a big loss for them. That's a team that needs bats. Their pitching is fantastic, especially in the rotation. I like the back end of their bullpen with Cody Allen. And so if they can get enough hitting, again, that's going to be difficult with Brantley on the shelf. They're going to be an interesting team. They very severely underachieved last year as one of just two teams in the division with a positive run differential. In the West, they have the Astros coming out on top. The Astros had a fantastic year. They're kind of a fun parallel with the Twins in that it's teams that are kind of coming up through the ranks with draft picks and doing a little bit here and there with trades. Haven't gone out and had that big splash free agent signing that I think people are expecting them to, but the West is pretty nuts too, with the Mariners, Rangers both projecting to be just a couple games behind the Angels at 500 and the A's, who had just a disastrous 2015 season, only four games under 500 in this projection. It's going to be topsy-turvy in the West. That's again indicative of the entire league on the whole. Have you ever seen maybe in football, Andy, where an entire conference or an entire league is just up for grabs? Does it kind of remind you a little bit of like the NFC a little bit?
To a degree, it actually kind of reminds me of the AFC, this year, especially
More so, okay.
in the playoffs. And to bring it down to like a micro scale, it seems like not the in terms of level of play, but of how wide open divisions like the AFC South can be, and the NFC South as well. Whereas it's not a elite top to bottom, but every single year any of the four teams can win. That's kind of what it seems like.
Yeah, and there's really a feel for that with each of these divisions. The worst team in the projections for the American League is the Orioles with 76 wins. The best is Boston again with 92. But otherwise, you're, excuse me, talking about 14 teams with a win range of 76 to 86. So 10 wins top to bottom over a full 162 game season with a little bit of variance shaken in. And you can see why all 15 teams have a reason for optimism heading into 2016. The National League is a little bit more top heavy in the sense that, and you saw it in the postseason too, there's just teams that can shut you down with their pitching. And that's even the Cubs with Lester and Arrieta at the top. The Cardinals, even without Lance Lynn, are going to be nasty with Carlos Martinez and Michael Wacha. The Dodgers lost Greinke, still got Kershaw. The Diamondbacks could be interesting now that they've got Greinke. And then there's the even year magic of the Giants, who I believe have had a fantastic offseason. They've got five fantastic starters they can throw at you. Maybe the Bumgarner guy kind of stands out as the ace, but four other guys that can really get it done. And so the National League, again, will be kind of fun. The East is interesting to me because they have the Nationals bouncing back from last year's tough season to win 88 games and take that division. I don't think Mets fans will take that lying down, especially not with their fantastic cast of young pitchers. But, you know, they have had a pretty quiet off season. I think people had really expected them to hopefully lock down Ben Zobrist, who spurned them for the Cubs. And they really didn't have a backup plan. And so the Mets offense was kind of what held them down early last season. The pitching kind of carried the load and even into the postseason. They're going to be, again, searching for bats. They did benefit from the early retirement of Michael Kadire, an old friend and a familiar name to Twins fans here in the Midwest. But at the same time, you know, that came down after they had missed out on Zobrist. And I think they would have liked to have known they had that financial flexibility at the time to maybe bump that offer to Zobrist and kind of lock him down. And he would have been a perfect fit for a team that kind of, you know, can use help at a number of different positions off and on. As far as the West, you know, they got the Dodgers at the top. The Dodgers are sometimes kind of feel like Yankees West, like they're playing a completely different game than everybody else in terms of spending money. But they got outbid by the Diamondbacks for Zach Greinke. I don't know how you let that happen. But at the same time, it makes the West even more interesting because the Giants, again, that even year magic, they went out and got Denard Span to play center field, another familiar name to Twins fans here. And the Diamondbacks, again, you can't sleep on them. The Rockies and Padres, you know, it's going to be a pretty tough go-around for them getting beat up by the top three teams. But again, this is a little bit more of a spread. They've got the worst team with 66 wins. That's the Phillies, the Braves, 67. Those are probably two most moribund franchises in the National League. Going to need a lot of help to dig out of the cellar for either of those clubs. That is going to mean that other teams in the division could beat up on them and they'll kind of steal some cheap wins. But again, top team in the NL Central with the Cubs, 95 wins. I think you're looking at probably the best all-around team in the National League, if not the entire big leagues. Andy, is there a team, American League or National League, that really stands out to you as the best team in baseball?
Well, you probably have to go Cubs, you know, right?
I really think so.
Yeah, with them stealing Hayward away and then, you know, Theo doing Theo things there. And it's a year late for the Back to the Future crowd.
Yeah, isn't that true? It's you know what? I think they'll be happy to go to this future, too. And I think there's some subtle brilliance in stealing Hayward away from the Cardinals and John Lackey. You can't forget that, too. The idea that you've weakened a division rival at the same time as you've brought in Hayward, who should be a success on pretty much all fronts. You know, average fans know his name. He's going to bring people to the ballpark. He's a big hit with the Sabermetrics crowd. He takes a ton of walks, plays really good defense. And I think you're looking at a win all across the board for a Cubs franchise that is doing a lot of really great things in the baseball world. You know, they're developing through free agency, through the draft. They're doing it through international free agency where they're signing guys like, you know, Jorge Soler. It's been a multifaceted approach that has really built a team that looks to be able to sustain a run, not only now with all these guys young, but into the future, especially with the TV deal coming down the pipe here in the next couple of years, which is why they've been able to kind of kick the can down the road with Hayward's money, and they'll be able to pay him, you know, a deferral. That's a benefit that some of these teams have that the Twins, for instance, don't have with a limited market contract. And you know, you're playing a different game, and that's what the Diamondbacks use to sign Greinke. It's what the Dodgers have used, besides the bankrolls of their ownership, to kind of dominate that player acquisition market. Switching gears just a little bit, there are three big remaining free agents on the market. I believe you wouldn't call Chris Davis an outfielder. All three of these guys can play outfield. Chris Davis is basically a first baseman DH type. It depends on if he's going to leave Baltimore, I think, where the rest of these chips will fall, because I think Baltimore is a pretty good fit for Justin Upton or Yoenis Cespedes. I thought they were a fit for Denard Span, but Giants swooped in, gave him a three-year deal for $31 million. But honestly, the Mets still kind of hang in the air as a team that needs offense, should have money to spend, but don't. That's just such a weird vibe for a team from New York City to be claiming poverty, but at the same time, here we are. But you know, I've seen some interesting theories, like why are these big free agents still out there? And it's just, you know, it's early to mid-January. It's not, you know, spring training isn't starting for another 5 weeks. It's not like these guys are, you know, chomping at the bit to take a one-year offer and kind of rebuild their value. honestly, though, I think one of these guys has to land with the Orioles. I know they're steadfast in their offer with Chris Davis not to go above the like $154 million they've offered him, which honestly could be a great deal or it could be a horrible deal, depending on how he ages. Big, strong slugger like that, those guys sometimes don't age very well. And so that could be a disastrous contract if it came to fruition. Upton kind of does a little bit of everything really well, 28 years old, coming off a pretty decent season with the Padres. And, you know, as I survey the landscape, sometimes it's hard to find a good fit where you're just like, yeah, this is where this guy's going to land. And it might make Twins fans upset specifically, but also the White Sox have to be considered a contender for one of these guys. Most likely Upton or Cespedes. Their outfield is a little shakier than you know, their corner spots in the infield or DH. But honestly, I think the White Sox are going to be a factor with these guys. And then, I don't know, I mean, you can never sleep on the Yankees or Red Sox. I just don't think there's really a need or a spot for those guys to spend that kind of money. So you're probably looking at maybe Orioles, White Sox, and you know, if things break right, maybe the Mets could steal one of these guys. But there's always surprises, too. The Marlins stepped up and signed Wei Yin Chen. That was one of the remaining solid starters. Gave him a five-year deal with an opt-out after 2 years. And so, you know, there's always these pop-up hashtag mystery teams that John Heyman likes to tweet about. And honestly, I'll be interested to see where these guys land and how soon it happens because, again, as we progress further into the offseason, there is that worry that these guys, you know, might not have as strong of a market as expected. I don't really think that's the case with any of these guys. Switching gears again, I would like to look at best off seasons, and that's something that I've kind of dabbled in here as we've gone through this first episode. I think the Cubs obviously stand out as kind of number one with a bullet in terms of best off seasons with Hayward and Zobrist and to a lesser extent Lackey. But the Giants are another team in that have done some great things, bringing in Samardzija, bringing in Span, and I'm sure I'm missing. Oh, Johnny Cueto. So they've obviously addressed a number of their weaknesses, not only behind Madison Bumgarner in that rotation, but in center field. And again, you know, you got to be looking for them to be a contender in the not only the National League West, but in the National League on the whole. After a year out of the spotlight for the Giants, they're obviously looking to get back up into the postseason and make some noise. As far as worst off seasons, the Mets, I think, you know, getting rid of Michael Kodaira is a benefit for them, but I don't think it's something that they can really hang their hat on as something they had planned for. And then the Rockies, who for some reason signed Gerardo Parra to a 3-year deal worth $26 million, that probably hastens the exit of one of their outfielders, whether it's Dickerson, whether it's Carlos Gonzalez. And again, to make a move, to make another move, it's just kind of shuffling deck chairs for a team that really doesn't look like it has any set strategy. Obviously coming off a trade of Troy Tulowitzki that netted them a big headache in Jose Reyes, who's going through some domestic assault issues. Again, no way to know if that was going to happen, but that's going to be a big hindrance to the Rockies once his potential or even likely suspension gets handed down. So it's a team that just seems to be rudderless, and they still haven't really found that niche in a market in a city where the ball flies out of the ballpark, and you know they can score a ton of runs, but they just can't prevent any. And so, you know, it'll be interesting to see what their direction is, but I'm just not feeling it right now. So to wrap up this first episode, I did pose the opportunity to listeners to post some questions, and so we did get a few pretty good ones. The first one that came in was from a friend of mine named Corey Englehart, a baseball teammate of mine in town ball over the summer. He says, is there any chance the Twins are going after Jake McGee? McGee is a fantastic left-hand reliever for the Rays, and true to form with the Rays, he's starting to get expensive, and so they're trying to flip him for value. Bullpen is pretty much the last place where the Twins could add significant value, and I think that, you know, McGee is obviously a blatantly obvious big-time upgrade, but at the same time, I think that the price on somebody like that would be like a Max Kepler or, you know, a higher-end prospect. I can't see the Twins getting into that market. And it's not for, again, a lack of need or a lack of ability to use a guy like that, but just a lack of wanting to pony up the assets to get that. Another friend, Armin, asked, what are your thoughts on the Mike Pelfrey deal with Detroit? And I've been a outspoken Pelfrey critic for the last 3 years that he spent with the Twins. Honestly, I think his skill set plays up in the bullpen. I think that the Tigers will eventually make that switch and will be better for it. But at the same time, as a fifth starter, you could do better, you could do worse. You know, multi-year deal. He keeps getting multi-year deals for some reason, and I think it's a belief of his in his durability, which he exhibited a little bit more this year, but at the same time has not been a hallmark of his in the last couple of seasons. So I think, you know, it's an iffy deal for a team that, you know, made a big investment in Jordan Zimmermann, so it's not going to be their only improvement to a rotation. And in that sense, that you can kind of make it defensible. Luke Widman wants to know, is Justin Morneau a fit on the St. Louis Cardinals? And I have to say, I don't believe so. They have got plenty of depth at first base in terms of Brandon Moss, Matt Adams, and then Piscotty, who will probably start in right field and kind of switch off with Moss at first base. Obviously, National League, there's no DH spot, so Morneau as a bench bat doesn't make a ton of sense to me. I think Morneau could be a fallback option for someone like the Orioles, maybe Seattle. But at this point, it doesn't really look like he's got much of a market. And it's too bad because when he was healthy in Colorado, he was a very, very nice player, did a nice bit of a rebound after leaving the Twins, but at the same time did battle concussion issues again in 2015. And, you know, it's time to wonder if it's maybe over for him. He'll be 35 this year and just maybe can't play the game anymore. And that would be kind of a sad thing, too, to see, you know, Michael Kadire and Justin Morneau leave the game in relatively short order. Anyway, that's about it. That's what I've got for you guys in the first episode of Midwest Swing. Again, keep your ears and eyes on Cold Omaha and the podcast network. We got some pretty fun things coming down the pipes in terms of other podcasts, some new contributors, and a lot of neat things. So thanks for joining us. For my co-host, my co-pilot, Andy Carlson, this is Brandon Warren signing off and saying join us again next time.
This has been a Cold Omaha Podcast Network production. The music for Midwest Swing was created and produced by Deeb. To hear more of his tracks, visit soundcloud.com/Deeb.